when that little voice starts, you're not good enough, your hair looks crap, like whatever, whatever, then all I do is with my left hand, I tap my left shoulder. So what that does is brings in what I call my inner coach. And so as soon as I do that, as soon as I tap my left shoulder with my left hand, the brain is confused. That's all we're doing is we're just confusing it for a second because it's now paying attention to what I'm doing rather than this voice going on and on. The little voice stops. The inner coach means you've got quiet for probably a millisecond. However, in that time, you can give yourself an affirmation in that moment. So the affirmations are so important. Yes, you are. You are capable, Gail, rather than, oh, you're an idiot, Gail, which is what the little voice can say.
Welcome to the Inspire to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Today's guest is Gail Hardy, co-founder of the Global Leadership Foundation, an organization devoted to raising emotional health levels across the globe. Gail is internationally recognized for her leadership and organizational transformation work, partnering with boards and senior leaders around the world to drive meaningful change. With a deep focus on emotional health, resilience, and conscious leadership, she has helped countless individuals and teams lead with purpose and authenticity, and is a fellow of the Institute of Managers and Leaders, a director at Small Giants Academy and the Talents Foundation, and co-author of The Emotionally Healthy Leader, which is an amazing book where she's working with emotional health and the Enneagram. I'm so excited to dive into her journey today, her philosophy on emotionally healthy leadership, and how we can all lead with more heart and self-awareness. Gail, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you on.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
I wanted to start by, I guess, understanding, because you've spent so many years helping leaders and organizations thrive through emotional health and transformation. But I wanted to first know your story. What was it that first drew you to this work and led to the creation of the Global Leadership Foundation?
That's a great start question for me because it's a long history, but I'll make it short. One of my very important roles during my career was to help a family in the wine industry build the organization, really grow and develop it, as well as keep it in family hands, which is often hard when you're in growth. And my job was to help them do just that. And the organization we used at the time really worked at their consulting firm. And I think for most of us, we go, oh, consultants, they just tell us the time by looking at our watch or their watch. And what I realized was the way that they went about supporting people to move through change was quite profound. And I realized that the opportunity that existed to do that with more than just the family company I was in was available. So I stepped out, worked with that organization, very important transformative leadership group, and finally took the big step of going out on my own. It was there that I met Malcolm Lazenby, co-founder of Global Leadership Foundation. And what I realized was that the work he was doing around emotional health and the work that I was doing around leadership and organization transformation just fitted well together. There's a great story behind that. I won't go into it, but really what we sat down one day and said is, if we can really work with leaders on raising their emotional health, keeping them above the line in the way they lead and engage others, then we're doing the right work. And so within 24 hours, we set Global Leadership Foundation up. At that stage, we realized that in many ways, as consultants, we could good money. And we knew that often being a not-for-profit or setting up that type of organization wouldn't necessarily benefit us or others, given that we're usually looking for grants and trying to find money to keep you going. We knew we could do that. So we remained a private company. We're Global Leadership Foundation, PTY LTD. If we were starting up now, so that was 2003, starting up now, we'd be a social enterprise, but then they didn't exist. So from that time on, our profit every year has gone into a philanthropic fund for the development of leaders in community. And so we're a private company with a philanthropic fund, and we spend our time across the globe doing exactly what you've identified, raising emotional health.
Would you say that that is the ethos and the philosophy behind the business?
We truly believe that when we're above the line, so when we're making conscious choices, when we have respectful relationships and we engage in mindful practices, our state of well-being is enhanced. So when we're above the line, we're more open, we see things with bigger perspective, we don't react, we literally make choices about how we show up. And that's what we wanted for all leaders across the globe.
Yeah, I've been very, I guess, blessed in that I learned about the above and below the line theory in my very first year in business. And I wish they taught this in school. But for those that are listening that aren't sure what this above the line and below the line theory is, how can you kind of map that out for us?
Sure. So the best example is, I'm assuming most of us have been in a car when someone is braked in front of us. And the first thing we do after we put our foot on the brake is usually not all that acceptable. So a hand on the horn, we might swear, we might put our finger in the air, nothing that's at all useful. And we call that reactive behaviour. And when we're in that space, when there's no thinking, so in that minute, there's a trigger and we just react, that's what we call below the line. The difference is, in the same car, somebody brakes in front of us. However, we make a choice to just be calm, put our foot on the brake and just accept and not get into a space of simply reacting. We've actually made a conscious choice to do something differently. That's above the line. The best example often is our loved ones. They really know how to push our hot buttons. And usually when they push that hot button, we do something, we react very quickly and then often regret it later. So it's not that we're saying the world should not have those below the line behaviours. It's about what we do with them. So if we simply react and don't care, and who gives us whatever, then we are in a reactive space. We're not thinking not only about ourselves, but about others. As soon as we come above the line, we can still feel that way, but we make a different call as to how we show up. And as leaders, just imagine it. If everybody that worked with you spent their time below the line, it's not a pleasant place to be in. We often will just quit. If we don't quit physically, we'll quit emotionally, we'll quit mentally, we'll do what's needed. In an environment where leaders are above the line, we have a different atmosphere, a different way of engaging. We want to be in that space and we give more. So above the line is very much about conscious choices, mindful practices, respectful relationships. Below the line, it's blame, defend, deny and justify. So very different ways of engaging in the world.
Yeah, I love this model so much. And I remember when I ran my very, very first workshop before I niched into social media coaching. And I remember drawing a line. So for the listeners, just kind of imagine just a line in the center of the page. And above the line was accountability, responsibility and ownership. And below the line was exactly what you just said. It was blame, denial, and justification. And even though it was so simple, it stuck to me to this day. It's been 7 years since that workshop. Would you say that like people that live above the line are always a bit more fulfilled in the way they live their life?
I think one of the things we know, certainly from working with leaders and anyone who uses this model, is that we are making very conscious choices. So we live a different way. We don't just simply wander into a space and just do whatever happens. We really are very aware. So often what we see is people say, I just have a different perspective. I can see different opinions. I may not agree with them, but I understand why people have them. So there's a very different way of relating when we're above the line. And you're right, accountability, responsibility, those things are just part of how we do our work rather than, oh, I better be accountable, oh, I better be responsible, which doesn't work. If we're pushing ourselves to do that, usually it's because there are below the line behaviours in action. We're trying to justify something. I'm going to do it this way. This is how I'm going to show up, which is not an effective way of leading.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think anybody's ever blameless in a situation.
No, absolutely. It always takes more than one. It's how we show up and what we do to keep above the line that can change that situation.
And I think this really applies so much in relationships, in personal relationships and friendships as well.
Absolutely. Well, I keep talking about leaders because that's our world. Without this, I wouldn't be the person I am. And not every day, every minute am I above the line. One of the things that I really still get distressed about is seeing rubbish in the streets. And I can be quite virtuous around, wow, what is this person doing? Why are they throwing it down there? And I've realized that I can get angry about it, or I can get on and do something about it. And so the work that we do is encouraging people to think about when they're above the line, they're also more caring for people around them. They're more connected. The environment's more important. So there's a whole lot of other things that come when we're above the line.
Yeah. And I think it definitely leads to a world with a lot more empathy and understanding, which is such a beautiful place to be and so much more pleasant for us to be around. And you've also written very, very beautifully about the three centers. Mm. And when we first met, you demonstrated that. We've got some resources in the show notes for anyone that's listening and driving right now and just wondering about these three centers that we're talking about. Definitely come back to the show notes and download these resources that we've got attached for you. But you mentioned the head, the heart, and the gut. Mm-hmm. And they are essential parts of how we think, how we feel, and how we make decisions. Mm. And for those that are hearing about this for the first time, how would you describe these centers and what they mean in everyday leadership? And what is the overlap of the three centers? What is it? What's contained in there?
So when we talk about those three centers, we have three circles and they overlap. So like a Venn diagram. And in the middle, when all of those three centers, the body, heart, and the head, are aligned, then we have what we call a sense of presence. So there's something quite different, and you'll all know this. Every one of us has a moment in time where we might call it in the zone or in flow. So athletes pay a lot of money for sports psychologists to get them to this space, but we'll have fleeting moments of this regardless. It could just be sitting in the sun and it's shining down on you and you feel warm and everything stops still, or you're walking on the beach and suddenly it just feels like time is of no consequence. So these moments, some people say, I get it when I'm gardening. It's almost like everything else fades away.
Or dancing.
Dancing, absolutely. And so these moments are signals to us of a different psychological state. And when we have the three centers aligned, that psychological state we can access. So if we think about the body center, so from a physiological perspective, we talk about the gut, and what they've been finding now in neuroscience and research is that we have almost as many neurons in the gut as we do in the head, in the brain. So the gut is all about action. It's all about making things happen. It's about being autonomous, being in self-control and control of not of others, but control of you. And it's very much about that sense of doing things. So that action orientation, the heart is very different. So in the gut, we talk about instinct, that sense of self. In the heart, we talk about intuition, that sense of others. So the heart is all about connection. It's all about relationships. It's all about belonging. It's about finding a place that is part of the world with others. Very different centers. And when we have those centers aligned, we connect with others and we get stuff done. When we bring the head in, the head is all about what we call insight. So this is not the busy mind, not the bit of the brain at the frontal cortex. Right now, as you're listening to this, we know that you'll also be, if you're driving, you're going to be watching the road. You might be talking to somebody next to you as well as hearing this. We run at least three streams of attention. And what the middle brain does is when we're in a state of presence, that busy mind disappears and great aha moments arrive. And normally the aha moments, people will say, oh, that's when I'm in the shower, or I've parked the problem and I've just gone for a walk and there the answer is. So that aha moment we love to call, that's a sign of presence. That actually means you've let go of the busy mind, you've connected in with how you're feeling, you connected in with what needs to be done, and the decision you make is usually a great decision. So when all three centers are functioning well, the decisions become easier. What we do know is that for most of us, if we're just above the line, so we're living a life of just above the line, two of those three centers are really strong. And we'll often say to people, think about a decision you made with your gut. And we'll say to people who uses their gut to make decisions, people will say, yes, me. And then we'll say, and who of you then rationalized that decision away? And a lot of people will put up their hand. So while their gut is helping them make the decision, logic and rational thinking comes in and pulls them away from their gut feel. And often people will say, you know, I should have trusted my gut. I wish I hadn't used my head to keep going with that decision if I just trusted my gut. So what we know is when all three are lined up, that aha moment is connected to all the three centers. How you're feeling, how you're acting, and really and truly what you're really thinking, not just what you're thinking.
Wow, that's so profound. I'm going to bring it back to dating because I'm writing a book on dating at the moment, so it's front of mind.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking about when a woman is sitting at a date with someone and she's met them for the first time and the very first thought is, he's not present with me. And she goes, okay, so her body is telling her that she doesn't feel like the man is comfortable or present with her. But then later on throughout the date, she is starting to find him very attractive. The conversation's going much better. He walks her, you know, to the restaurant where she's meeting her friends, or maybe they hold hands and kiss or whatever. And so her head's now telling her, oh, no, no. This is great. He's a really handsome. He's got great qualifications. He's very handsome. And she talks herself out of it. So is that kind of similar where she's got now not aligned? So she's not in that present moment. And so therefore there's that misalignment. And then later down the track, she eventually finds out maybe he's got commitment issues or he just didn't feel the same way as she did. And her gut, that initial instinct was right, that she'd overridden it with her emotions, which is what you've said is the heart, and her logic, which is her head.
Yeah. It's a really good example. I would say our experience is that most people who do have a gut feel, it's worth considering. It used to be sort of pushed away as something, oh, don't worry about it. Think it through was often the words. But what we do know now is those neurons are so powerful. It's connected directly to the most primitive part of the brain. And what we need to pay attention to is that if that feeling's there, it's there for a reason. So while it's hard these days because there's all this, lots of logic and lots of rational and lots of emotions, it's hard to just trust the gut.
Yeah.
Truly, the experience is that I think I can't remember the exact data, but over 90% of initial gut feel is worth paying attention to.
Yes, a number of times my friends and I talk and we go, oh my goodness, I should have trusted my gut feeling. Mm-hmm. I had a feeling that very first time. And I want to talk about this in terms of like hiring and business. When we're interviewing somebody and we meet them for the very first time in person or on a Zoom call, that initial gut feeling is usually correct, right?
It's helpful. I think some recruiters will tell you that if you just do that, you're not giving the person the greatest opportunity, mm-hmm. particularly on screen, because the micro expressions that we get face to face are quite different from the micro expressions we can pick up on screen. Our brains aren't trained to look at rectangles. Our brains are actually trained much bigger than that. They're trained to look more broadly. So a screen interview can be quite deceptive. And I think we all learned that in COVID, that we could still wear our pajamas and look great because all we could see was the face. So I would be on the side of recruiters a little to say gut is really helpful. The other thing, though, is we've got to also look at our own personality and at what we call our level of emotional health. So if we're predisposed in a particular way to a particular personality, or we're not necessarily that much above the line, our perceptions are still clouded by our personality. So the gut is attached to us. It's not separate from our personality. The brain will be overlaying some perceptions that we need to be really careful about. So my sense would be when we're doing the work in interviews, we're looking to see where the person's emotional health is as well. Are they above the line, below the line? If we think about the dating situation, what are we noticing in the way that they're paying attention? Are they distracted every time they speak? So there are things that we can all look at, the nuances that are a little deeper than just gut. However, I'm still with you. It usually will be informed, and I'd hope that we're a little more informed than just doing interviews by gut feel.
Yeah, so we've got to pay attention to that initial gut feel.
Yeah.
Make sure that it is kind of front of mind, but don't use it as the sole judge and kind of combine the three.
Yes, it's very easy to say, oh, my gut tells me this, but that can be a justification for just wanting somebody like you. Or it could be a justification for not wanting them at all. It may have nothing to do with their capability or who they are.
Yeah. Wow, that's very interesting. And I guess that comes back to the blog where you mentioned that often we rely too heavily on one center. Yeah. And maybe we're only leading with our head, or we make decisions purely from the heart. And when we start bringing all three into balance, that's when we make good judgments.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting. I think if I gave you a couple of examples, it's quite telling. So often in the corporate world, the private sector world, people were told to leave their emotions at the door. You're here to plan and to do. And so that's plan is the head, do is the body. And so don't come with all those feelings. Things have changed, and I love the fact that things have changed, but that's still often how you see it. There's a sense of I'm going to plan it and then I'm going to make it happen, plan, make it happen, without necessarily connecting in with the team. And often founders, when we're working with founders, they'll have a great idea and then they just want to make it happen. Great idea, make it happen. And then their team will go, hang on, do you remember us? Hello. So it's like we have to remember to bring in the third center. Often what we find in government, we might find there's a lot of planning. So we've got to make a plan. Then we're going to go and consult. Oh, now we've had some different opinions that we have to change the plan. Now we better take it back and consult again. Oh, we've got more changes. Okay, more plans and more consulting. So sometimes what people will say is things take a long time to get to action because there's so much planning and so much consulting. This is not a reflection on all government, but it tends to have that sort of bureaucratic feel where it takes a long time to get something to turn up.
Yeah.
And the last one we'll often talk about, the not-for-profits or grassroots organisations where you've got a group of passionate people, they're all connected and they just want to make something happen. So they get connected and they make it happen and they get connected and they make it happen, and then they realise they've run out of money because they didn't put in for the grant or they didn't plan. So I'm exaggerating these examples, but it just gives you a sense of when all three centres are together, the difference it can make. When one of them's missing, you have to remember to bring it in. And most of us tend to have two centres, one or two centres that are strong, and then the third one, just call on it and go. We use the three questions for the gut. What do I deeply need in this situation? For the heart, what do I truly feel in this situation? And for the head, what do I really think in this situation? And they're really powerful questions.
Wow. I was just about to say that those are very, very powerful questions. And I'm definitely keen to sit down and maybe even print that out or have that in a note on my phone so that I'm always referring back to those questions. Because I think in life, the questions that we ask, the more powerful and above the line questions that we ask, the more, I guess, present and intentional our lives become. It's all about the quality of the questions.
Absolutely. You just nailed it. I don't need to say any more. It's so true.
I love the idea of leaders who think with their head, feel with their heart, and trust their gut. But in action, what does that balance kind of look like? And how can the leaders that are listening, how can we begin to cultivate this in our own lives?
Those three questions are a great start. In fact, one of the things that we really encourage is leaders and their teams to use those questions in really tough decisions. So if they do have to, say, decide between one particular priority and another because of budget, then if we think about the two different situations, what is it we deeply need in one? What do we really think? What do we truly feel? And you start to get people's deeper perspectives. So the decision becomes far more cohesive. It's not that everyone has the same opinion, but what you're really getting is how people are truly feeling, really thinking, and what they deeply need. So we'd certainly encourage questions that enable that conversation to happen. And the other thing too is if we're thinking about leading above the line, as you said, putting these somewhere where you can go, is this just a thought or is this something I really believe? And that's quite different. So I can have a whole lot of ideas and then what is it that I want to do with them? Where do I want to take that? Rather than just, you know, I've got an idea, let's just do it.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. Thank you, Gail. I think that really paints a picture for us and definitely is a situation that a lot of people encounter where they're sitting there in a round table and they're going, well, what's the priority? And it's stressful because it's much easier to just take action than to sit down and to think strategically.
Or just give it to a leader and say it's your problem.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing is this is a very inclusive process. When we're using the whole body to be present and make decisions, it's a very different experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You've worked with leaders, senior leaders and boards all across the world. And I'd love to know from your experience, what are some of the most common challenges leaders face when it comes to their emotional health and their self-awareness?
The first challenge that just comes to mind is a lot of people seem to do a lot of development. They spend a lot of time in personal development or the organization will support them in their development. And yet when you ask the people around them what's different, people say nothing's changed. So what we know, and I was reflecting on this morning, that it's really easy to read a book. It's much more difficult to put that what the book says into action. So we come up with all these ideas, you know, we've gone and done mindfulness, we've done this, we've done that, and we still seem to be the same person. And what we know is that the application, that truly taking something and doing something with it can be very difficult. So one of the offers we make is to think about how you want to be, not what you want to do. So We talk about, for instance, if I wanted to be more above the line, I can read about it, but then I put in a practice that literally has me saying how I want to be each morning for 3 weeks. I don't know, this is going to sound weird, but for 3 weeks, just saying those words out loud and then looking for examples in your colleagues, at work, in a movie. When you're looking for examples, what you're doing is opening up the field for possibility. So it's a bit like you think you've bought the only purple Honda in Australia, and then the next day you see 3,000 of them. So what we're doing is opening up the field to possibility.
So activating our RAS.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what we know is that when we share those words out loud, we can just say them to ourselves in the mirror in the morning, and their qualities, not what I want to do, how I want to be. So calm, confident, capable, enthusiastic, joyful, qualities that we want more of, then guess what? In 3 weeks, we're going to see more of them. So the application of what we read, what we've practiced in terms of mindfulness programs, we need to bring ourselves into the picture. How do I want to be in my mindfulness practice? How do I want to be at work? It's a very different way of looking at it, but we know that without application, nothing changes.
I know this is a bit of a tangent, but you're reminding me of a conversation that I had with a business owner just this week. And I'm trying to work out why my brain's bringing this up, but I'm just going to share it anyway. I was talking about affirmations in the mirror as well, but I kind of said to him, I said, you know, I haven't always been this positive, like this person that's oozing with positivity. I know that you think that I was like born this way, but I wasn't always this way. Because he said, you know, I love the way you talk to yourself. Because I was like, yeah, I'm a lot kinder because I actually grew up. And you'd probably understand this because you've worked with a lot of people in China, but people with a background with Chinese parents and Chinese culture are often raised with very strict and high standards. And so we kind of bring that across into our life a lot. And we're very harsh on ourselves because we grew up needing to have good grades and to just perform. And so I said to him, when I wake up in the morning and I look in the mirror, imagine how my day would be if I looked in the mirror and the first thing that I said was, oh, you look so tired. And oh my gosh, my skin's so dehydrated. Oh, my hair is such a mess. I didn't like wake up and just look perfect. Imagine how my day would be if I woke up talking to myself like that versus if I woke up and I said, oh, it's a glorious day. I'm excited about what's to come. Okay, let me just brush my hair and let me get into a rhythm today and let me get myself fresh. Like, how different is it to talk to yourself negatively versus prepping yourself a little bit more? And I said to him, I think that I've had people say to me that I actually look better with age. And I don't know how that's possible because I think, you know, obviously as we age, we are like our cells, we have less of those like healthy cells that we're born with as children. They say you have less NAN and all these other interesting chemicals and you've got to take them as vitamins and things like that. But I believe, and I wonder if you can confirm this, I believe how we think and how we talk to ourselves actually changes ourselves. And we actually look better because we're kinder to ourselves and we speak in a more kind way. Is that true?
Absolutely. So there's a few scientific pieces. I won't go into all of them, but exactly the way you've described it, if you woke up talking the first way, then what you're doing is putting cortisol and adrenaline into the system. They're chemicals to protect you, to keep you safe from danger. They're primitive, and that's the way the brain doesn't distinguish between you getting up in the morning and saying, this is how I'm feeling, my hair's not good. It doesn't distinguish between that and the real story. It thinks you're in danger.
I've actually got tingles right now as you speak. So there's something really powerful about this concept because my body right now is giving me a reaction like this is powerful stuff. Yes.
So when you're in the other mode, what we know is that we get completely different chemicals into the system. So we get oxytocin, we get the chemicals that we want that keep us above the line, that actually don't make us, put us in la-la land and everything's happy and fizzy. But what it does is it changes the chemical balance. And so we are different. We think differently. The other thing that you've prompted, and part of the reason I'm sure for this story, is that first voice is what we call the inner critic. And the inner critic, my inner critic lives right next to my right ear. And that inner critic is a really powerful tool for keeping you below the line.
Yeah, I remember you sharing that at the workshop when we first met, and I thought that was so interesting. Could you share with us your exercise of quieting that inner critic?
So yes, when that little voice starts, you're not good enough, your hair looks crap, like whatever, then all I do is with my left hand, I tap my left shoulder. So what that does is brings in what I call my inner coach. And so as soon as I do that, as soon as I tap my left shoulder with my left hand, the brain is confused. That's all we're doing is we're just confusing it for a second because it's now paying attention to what I'm doing rather than this voice going on and on. The little voice stops. The inner coach means you've got quiet for probably a millisecond. However, in that time, you can give yourself an affirmation in that moment. So the affirmations are so important. Yes, you are. You are capable, Gail, rather than, oh, you're an idiot, Gail, which is what the little voice can say.
So is that similar to anchoring? I've heard in coaching that, so for the listeners, could you please maybe explain what anchoring is and how we can do some anchoring today?
So what we know, we talk about something called neuro-linguistic programming. So really all we're doing is repatterning the brain. It doesn't mean that those pathways are no longer there. What it means is we're creating new ones. So by forming a new pattern, so we anchor We anchor a new pattern by physically, or what we call somatically, doing something differently. So very intentionally using a physical action informs the brain that something's changed. And what we're now doing is saying to the brain, here, I have a new pattern for you, not the little voice on the right-hand side, but a left hand on my left shoulder, which means I'm calling it my inner coach. So we literally start a new neural pathway in the brain with an action. Without an action, it's just often a thought, but as soon as we physically do something with it or say it out loud, we've put it into what we call the field.
Wow. I've seen back in the year when I studied coaching, I've seen people demonstrate like anchoring by tapping like their elbow or a place that not many people would normally just, right, you know, brush or touch. So like their elbow or like the end of their palm or something, and just saying positive affirmations whenever they feel. So imagining being at a really safe and happy place, like their favorite beach or their favorite island or something, and then anchoring that in whenever they're in that really positive high frequency, mm-hmm, and that feeling, mm-hmm, and just tapping that point whenever they feel that state so that they can access it when they are in distress or, like you say, when their inner critic comes in.
Mm. Yes. So there are many techniques. The other one that's used, of course, is some people to have a little rubber band that they'll actually pull. And that's often to, same thing, it might be on their hand and they just pull it to remind themselves that they're in a pattern they want to change, then they go to the anchoring. So sometimes we need to come out of the habit to move into a new habit.
Yeah. Wow, that's really, really profound and very, very impactful. I wanted to share with the listeners that Gail has written, and well, she's co-authored The Emotionally Healthy Leader and Working with Emotional Health Enneagram. Gail, could you please tell us how these frameworks like the Enneagram help people understand themselves on a deeper level and strengthen the way they lead?
Mm-hmm. The thing we know, any journey of self-discovery usually comes from finding out something new about yourself. So my personality type really doesn't like to be put in a box. So one of the things, as soon as somebody says, oh, you're a this or you're a that, I just resist. It's a bit like, don't, you can't tell me what I am. So when Malcolm and I first met, Malcolm was working with a tool called the Enneagram. And this tool is based on the three centers. So there are three personality types that broadly live in the body. So a body oriented, three personality types that are heart-oriented, and three that are head-oriented. And it's based on a circular diagram. And what I said to him at the time was, well, I don't want to know what I am. I just want to be all of them. And he said, well, it's helpful to know who you are. However, ideally, what we're looking to do is when all three centers are aligned and we're above the line, we have the gifts of all of those personalities available. So we can be adaptable and flexible with the people that we meet, not just come in with our own personality and this is how I am and this is too bad if you don't like me, because that's how it is. What we are when we're emotionally healthy, above the line, and in a space of being able to access all of those gifts, we're a very complete person. So when we started to look at the book, we could see that above the line and below the line, for every personality, there are ways of being that are very different. So my base personality, when we look at me, I'm very visionary. I can see forward. I'm enthusiastic about possibility. And when I'm below the line, I'm incredibly scattered. And the gift comes from a fear of being trapped in emotional pain. So the more things I can do to get me out of that, the better, which means I'm very versatile. If I just see that as, well, that's how I am, bad luck, what it means is that I tend to live in a way where people would say, oh, she just does this and does that and runs here and goes there, and she's very scattered. And I can be, and I understand that. But what I also know is that if I'm above the line, I can see possibility, I can see potential. That's great, but I'd rather be more than that. And so what the Enneagram allows me to do is, on my journey of self-discovery, is to understand all of the other personalities, how they work, and what I can be using to be more effective as a leader, as a person in my life, And so the Enneagram is a really lovely tool for giving me the gifts that allow me to be more than just the base personality. But a lot of people, when they go on this journey, they start to go, well, I'm a this, so therefore that's just how I am, bad luck. And what we know is that that's just a way of staying safe rather than exploring what your potential is.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing about that. I think that concept is great because I'm also similar to you. I don't really think people talk about E-DISC and they talk about all the 16 personality types. And
MBTI, all of those. We have them all. Every one of those tools is really helpful if we're willing to see ourselves as more than what it is. So it's a journey of self-discovery. We just like the Enneagram because it gets a little deeper to help us understand what drives and motivates us, what keeps us below the line, and what enables us to get above the line.
Yeah, that's very practical. You've also shared about, I guess, integration. I really want to touch on and move towards this vertical development concept. And again, for those that are listening, there's a resource with a graphic and it will really help imprint this. If you're watching this episode, we might be able to even share that on the screen. But could you maybe share with us a little bit about vertical development?
So our experience generally when we're learning to become a leader is that we get all this training in things like giving constructive feedback, dealing with difficult situations, problem solving, making great decisions. And all of those skills are what we call horizontal skills. They're all available, and I bet many of the people who are listening have done some training around them. And then we go back to the workplace and nothing changes, nothing happens. And that's often because we don't have the capability. We're not above the line enough to be able to do something with them. So what happens is we get back to work and maybe our manager might say to us, oh, don't bring that stuff here. That was nice. You did it out there. Good, but we don't need it here. And so what happens is people end up with all of these steps and skills, but without being vertically integrated. So without bringing the three centers together, without being above the line, without understanding emotional health, they're just skills on paper. They're actually not tangible. Vertical development really recognizes levels above the line and levels below the line. And so when we look at adult development, we don't stop developing at 21. It's a bit like that's sort of the last party that gets celebrated until 40. And somehow in between all of that, you're just you. We know we keep developing. Unfortunately, what happens is that people stall because they're not supported to think more about above the line and below the line, the three centers, what is my emotional health like? It's almost as though there's a stalling time where people, and some people will say they never grew up. And often that's because we've never been given the opportunity to understand what we're talking about today, above and below the line. You said, I wish that had happened in school. So do we, because what it then enables people to do is see that there are ways of being above the line that are very different to being below the line. And vertical development is all about getting above that line.
Wow. So it's understanding the impact that we have on others and having more self-awareness and self-understanding.
As soon as we know what drives and motivates us, we can recognize the impact we have. If we don't know that, then we don't know what we're looking for. Most leaders, when you ask them what their impact is, they'll say, oh, you have to talk to someone else, talk to my colleagues. And we go, no, we're talking to you. Most people don't click on that inner observer and see what the reaction is from others as to what they're saying or doing. So we don't usually look for our impact unless we're above the line.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question about intuition and emotional awareness. I mean, I think a lot of people go, oh, well, that's nice. You're intuitive. And oh, that's nice. You're so heart-centered, but it's not for me. I can't do it. Or I need to put a lid on this. I hear this a lot. I need to put a lid on it and just carry on. And they're talking about their emotions. And unfortunately, I see this a lot with men in particular. Mm. And I really have a lot of compassion towards that, because I think that in order to be a great leader, we need to lead from a place of balance. So what's one simple practice that the listeners could start with today to reconnect to not only their head, but also their heart and their gut?
Yep. So we have three very simple practices that you can do. I can describe them. Very easy to do. So the first one, to connect with the body, so to get back into gut, to be grounded, we just put 2 feet on the floor, put our hands on our knees, palms of hands pressed into your knees so you can feel it. As soon as you do that, the frontal cortex stops. So the busy mind stops for about, we'll give you it about 30 seconds. But what that does, and I had somebody say it to me just yesterday, I used their technique just before a meeting and I was so different. So what it is, it's a shortcut, and that's all it is. You can't stay there, but it's a shortcut to getting back into the body very quickly. The heart center, one of the simplest things we can do is simply put our hand on our chest, not on our heart, but just in the middle of our chest. The heart field is seriously large. It's an electromagnetic field. By putting our hand here, what we're doing is we're just breaking the field and bringing the energy back to us. So this is a very quick way of connecting into the heart. You'll actually start to feel warm. That's what it does. And it stops us from judging ourselves or others. A beautiful place in a meeting where you're really struggling with what's being said. If you simply put your hand on your chest and no one will know that you're doing it, it will really literally bring you back into your heart center. A lot of people say, oh, I'd look really stupid doing this, or I can't do it. In the Middle East, it's a natural gesture of welcome. They use two hands and they usually bow gently with their hands on their chest as a sign of welcome. It's a natural human gesture.
Did you mention as well that for empaths that are giving a lot of energy, yes, it helps us?
It helps you keep that energy in. That's the other thing, is because the heart field can be so large, it actually takes our energy away if we're not careful. If we're forever people pleasing, we're doing a lot more than we need to. So bringing your hand here, it literally breaks the field. So you're giving yourself compassion rather than giving everybody else what you think they need.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, Gail, thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed what we've discussed here today. And I guess I wanted to wrap this up today with one simple question, which is, if you had one message to leave the world, and there was just this one message that would go out to schools, be broadcasted all across media, television, etc., what would that message be?
I was just reflecting on Jane Goodall. She left a beautiful message for the world, and that for me, the message I'd leave is, we are at our best when we're above the line. How can we support each other to get there? It's by being very conscious about the choices we make, the practices we put in place, and the respectful relationships that we hold.
That's really beautiful and profound, and would make such an impactful difference in a ripple effect kind of way. I love that. Thank you.
Thank you.
To the listeners, I hope you've enjoyed joining us on this episode today. What a powerful episode where we talk about heart, head, gut, and how we can bring all three into alignment. And I hope that this will help you be able to lead from a place of balance a lot more. Feel free to come back to this episode at any time, as well as the resources. Get in touch with Gail as well if you have any questions. And don't hesitate at all to leave comments, ask, share, and of course it would be the cherry on top if you left a review for this episode as well. Gail, once again, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today. It's been such a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much.
So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.